The man is Glenn Steckling. The book he's written is Alien Bases on the Moon. That's the name of the book. Glenn Steckling has assumed the responsibilities of his family work in the field of UFO and ET research since his father, Mr. Fred Steckling, passed away in 1991. This knowledge represents years of personal experience and collective data. Now armed with first-hand sightings, that's quite a line, he continues to present the materials discovered and bequeathed his family, spanning over 60 years. Mr. Steckling's latest revision to his father's book, Alien Bases on the Moon, now Alien Bases on the Moon 2, contains a combination of over 100 of our NASA photographs, challenging the continued myth behind the, in quotes, dead moon and inhospitable planet theories, and exposes the increasing possibility of extraterrestrial activity there. Now, I'm going to say, just before I bring up the pod and bring on Glenn, that I'm a veteran of many years on Coast now, many visits with Richard Hoagland, and with others, I might add, some very good minds, frankly, who absolutely believe that there has been and is now something on our moon. I have interviewed men who have walked on the moon. And strangely, one of them said to me that in some strange way, he didn't really remember the time that he was on the moon. I said, you know, what was it like, doctor? And he said, well, you know, it's odd, Art. You'd think I would remember every last little tiny detail, but I didn't. And I always found that comment, it just rocked me back. A man who walked on the moon and yet kind of doesn't remember the details of what happened when he was there. I thought that was really, really odd. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Art. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight and your listeners.
So, look, I am a skeptic, Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can convert me. Many have tried. But on the other hand, I have this suspicion that something's wrong. We haven't gone back to the moon. We've sent some, you know, some probes, but I mean, man has not walked on the moon since.
And yes, that's true. We've done some very extensive lunar surveys. The Clementine probe, which was for the military,
right,
extensively mapped the moon and lunar surface as far as geologically and also with pictures. So if there's nothing there to see, one wouldn't spend so much money for an expensive mission.
Well, ostensibly, they claim they're looking for water, I suppose, or looking for certain minerals or something or another. But let's cut to the chase here. Wouldn't alien bases on the moon be simply impossible to hide, or would it?
Well, it would depend as well. First of all, let's take a look at some of the evidence that's been provided here. I've got an article here from the England's Royal Astronomical Society.
Okay.
And over a period of time, 40 members with their telescopes were looking at various geometrically shaped light patterns, confirmed sightings, 50-mile-long oblique objects, great white domes, long bridge-like structures, and in 1958, the Russian scientists saw as well huge oval glowing objects that were unexplained. And this is just one of tens of thousands of reports. I have another document here in front of me that came from NASA, in fact. It's a chronological listings of lunar events. This was put out in 1966 at Goddard Space Flight Center.
Yes.
And it lists, going back as far as 1870, lunar volcanoes, purple haze, part of the Plato crater of Plato glowing with light, small red glowing objects moving around the moon, luminescent areas around the crater Tycho, and it goes on for pages and pages and pages. So there clearly is some type of activity going on up there, and we talk about water on the moon. Already here in 1971, the news release that moon water was detected. And there seems to be a familiar reoccurring theme that information comes out, it kind of fades away for 20, 30 years, and then the same information comes out as well. The same as regarding Mars, I have these articles as well.
What about our own space program, Len? We sent men to the moon,
mm-hmm.
and men to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, walk me through it a little bit. How do human beings go to the moon, some of them remaining in orbit, circling the moon really closely, with a view like nobody's ever had. I mean, just a really good view. And then we had people walking on the moon itself. Now, granted, they might have only seen a tiny slice of what's up there, but surely with the massive size of the things that you're talking about and others have talked about, they had to have seen them.
Well, let's look at some of the quotes here. You may be familiar with the astronaut and physicist Brian O'Leary.
I am.
And his quote was, "Contacts between extraterrestrials seem to have been going on for decades, but we still don't want to admit it." Now, we all know Gordon Cooper, who recently passed away. And in 1976, on live television, he made a quote, "Intelligent beings from outer space visit our world in an effort to enter into contact with us. I have encountered various ships during my space voyages. NASA and the American government know this and possess a great deal of evidence. Nevertheless, they remain silent in order to not alarm the people." Now, there's another gentleman here by the name of Maurice Chatelain. He holds 11 patents for the telecommunications of the development for the Apollo system. Now, this man who sits in Mission Control Center has written a book, Our Ancestors Came from Outer Space. And he categorically lists that it seems that all Apollo and Gemini flights were followed both at a distance and sometimes also quite closely by space vehicles of extraterrestrial origin, flying saucers or UFOs. This is a direct quote from his book. So some have talked, some have not. There's a great deal of pressure. And there's a great deal of oversight in this particular subject, and absolutely when it has to do with our ranking officials and officers that are going into space. And we all know that there are certain papers one has to sign. So,
okay, but you know, a lot of these were generic comments, startling as they were. They were generic comments, and they weren't, "Hey, I was on the moon, and I'm going to break my silence, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I saw." It wasn't that. It was sort of a general belief in extraterrestrial life. Now, do you expect that before they die, one of our astronauts may do something like that?
It may happen. You know, everybody has families and children and grandchildren.
Yes.
And they have to weigh the consequences and the potential problems that may occur by divulging such type of information. Also, you find that the general public is often not very sympathetic or very supportive, and so you risk being ostracized both from your professional peers.
There is that.
And also from the general public as well, because there's such an incredible reticule factor that has been attached over the last several years.
I know, but even Neil Armstrong has made several kind of cryptic, wondrous remarks over the years. He doesn't talk very often, but when he does, he really makes some odd comments.
Yes, that's true.
And, of course, then we have the fact that many astronauts have ended up in divorce and various forms of real trouble. Certainly, you wouldn't expect that of all these guys with the right stuff, but they have.
Well, I mean,
You know, there's a lot of pain in trying to hide something. I'm not saying they are, but it could be suggested that they're under stress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that here's the key phrase that perhaps we should take a look at. I don't believe that it is either realistic or something to expect that somebody is going to, or a number of individuals are going to stand up and conclusively satisfy our curiosity. I mean, enough people have. We look at Major Kehoe. We look at We look at Frank Edwards. We look at Waverly Gervin. I mean, there is really such an immense list of people. Professor McDonald, who went before the Subspace Committee in 68. If people really would have an idea at the plethora of information and the immense amount of so-called names that have come out in support of the release of this information, they would be truly astounded. And I believe that it's very important to remind people of the rich and very real history that is associated to this subject. And we have gone off in some very convoluted tangents.
How about a straight-on question, Glenn? Why do you believe, and obviously you believe, that our government has absolute knowledge of what's on the moon? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. What motivation does our government have, in your opinion, for not telling us?
Well, it's difficult to put yourself inside the heads of somebody else. Let's put it this way. Certain policies are initiated, and they are continued as a matter of fact.
Okay, that's that just tells me about the ever-continuing cover-up.
That's true.
What I want to know from you is why you think, in other words, would knowledge of extraterrestrial presence as close as the moon have be too much of a social disruption? Would it disrupt our churches, our faith, our very basis for everyday living? Is that it?
Well, it would be if we wanted to remain closed-minded. It depends on the type of expression that we wanted to foster as far as ourselves as individual and as a people. I don't believe it would necessarily have to do that, but it depends on how closely we wanted to hold on to old beliefs. Remember, they burned Bruno at the stake for his beliefs. We believe the Earth was flat for a long time. We have come up with some peculiar habits and some peculiar ways of persecuting those who come to enlighten us a little bit, and it's not necessarily a very pleasant deal.
Yes, that, well, of course, brings up another topic, and that is whether you think that this extraterrestrial presence is benign, or you think there's a really good chance that it is very ominous and very evil by our standards.
From the information that I have been able to be exposed to, and I look at this from several different angles historically, when we look at the type of contacts that are reported in historical records, whether we go back into the Middle Ages, back into biblical times, or as far back as the early 1950s, we're looking at the type of interactions where it's reported there is a non-hostile, beneficial interaction, provided, of course, that we wish it as well. So in other words, nobody is taken against their will or done terrible things to. And I find it very interesting, and so did Major Kehoe in his book Aliens from Space, that in 1961, the whole direction of this very real subject went off to the scare tactic. And I believe there are specific reasons for that, and I believe to a great extent that is generated here.
So then,
not anywhere.
You're telling me the negative stories, and I've heard many of them, I've interviewed people, the negative abduction stories, you don't buy.
Let's say that I look at them with the same critical and skeptical eye that you have.
Fair enough, I guess.
I'm not saying that, let's put it this way. We experiment with all types of different research and development equipment here. We ultra-high frequency, low frequency, microwaves, the list can go on and on. And a lot of these have psychological repercussions. They cause loss of memory, which can be attributed to lost time. It causes agitation. It causes aggression. We are experimenting with a great deal of our own type of equipment, and we do this in a general fashion, not necessarily just on laboratory animals. And so whether, and I'm going to say this, all the stories of what people are talking about can be attributed to visitors from other worlds, I call that into question. I'm not saying that all of them are and all of them aren't, but I'm saying I have to look at them with the same critical eye that we should look at everything.
Well, I would say it would be a safe bet to say that a lot of what's reported probably either didn't happen or was the source of somebody's overactive imagination or whatever. But clearly there is something going on.
Yes.
I've interviewed enough people to know that something real is happening.
Mm-hmm.
People are being taken. I'm not sure that I can agree with your skepticism about their intent.
The big question is by whom?
Or rather, the fact that you think that, I guess, that they're relatively benign and that you dismiss stories of people who have been taken against their will and had things done that they were not happy with. There are an awful lot of those stories for you to be in doubt of them.
Well, there's a great deal of those stories as well, and I also look at it from somewhat of the eye of Carl Sagan, whose name we all recognize. And he,
sure.
And, you know, his quote was that if we take the percentages upon which this is being reported without some type of a critical eye, then hundreds of millions of people are taken, including your neighbors, and we're not noticing that happening. So we have a great deal of looking into that particular side. I'm not saying that everything is benign. I'm just saying that when you look at what is questioned officially and how information is disseminated and how it is collected, there is definitely a two-tier level to this particular subject.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that these visitors, Glenn, are watching a genetic experiment that they began?
No, I don't put such a clandestine spin on it, so to speak. I believe that we are being observed.
Why?
Simply because it's a learning process. Why not? I mean, we go to a different place, a different country. We observe the environment. We observe the people, the culture, the customs. Why would it be any different for anyone who comes to watch and look at us? When we look at, when you monitor the television and the radio and you watch what's going on this world, you must admit it is a very difficult classroom in the psyche of the human mind and human expression. We do a lot of things that are clearly hypocritical and, shall we say, non-consistent with what we between we say and we do. So I find it an excellent classroom to see the psychology of how we developed and how we think and how we react here. Why, I don't consider that strange at all.
And we're talking about alien bases on the moon. That's no small matter. Just a quick note here, turning to my back computer. There is an update. NASA climate expert says U.S. tried to silence him. It was in the New York papers. It reads, NASA's top climate scientist has accused the Bush administration of trying to stop him from speaking out after he called in a lecture for swift cuts in emissions of greenhouse gases linked to global warming. James Hansen, director of the U.S. Space Agency's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, said officials at NASA headquarters had ordered the public affairs staff to review his forthcoming lectures, papers, postings on the Goddard website, and requests for media interviews. All according to the New York Times now. Quote, they feel their job is to be this censor of information going out to the public, said Hansen, who told the paper he'd ignore the restrictions. Well, NASA says, Don Acosta, deputy Assistant Administrator for Public Affairs at NASA, denied to the Times that there was any effort to silence Hansen whatsoever. So that's one you should digest, think real hard about, real hard about. We'll be right back with Glenn Steckling. You know, skeptic is probably the wrong word. I'm not really a skeptic about this thing, this sort of thing, bases on the moon. I think I'm more like an agnostic on the subject. In other words, I surely do see it's possible. I've seen and heard an awful lot of things over the years that make me suspicious, really suspicious. But I can't say that I've seen anything that's knocked me out. Anyway, back to the ants for a moment. Glenn, surely a race of people who could get here from there, and we know there is a long way away at best, impossibly far away at worst, might, I mean, that's a lot of power. They'd be a type 2, type 3 civilization. They might regard us, I don't know, as an infestation. Why is that wrong thinking?
Well, I'm not going to say that any thinking is wrong thinking. Let's look at this in a different fashion, so to speak. When we're talking about the complexities of space travel, the technology that's required is immense.
Yes.
We're so used to science fiction where we just say warp speed and everything happens, but it really belittles the immense technology that's required to travel space, to navigate magnetic storms, asteroid belts, gravitational fields. We are talking a type of advancement and scientific capability that is a great deal past where we are today.
Yes.
Now, why would we assume that any civilization could advance 1,000, 2,000, how many thousands of years ahead of us in order to be able to travel space in such a fashion, but still remain archaic or barbaric in their sociological or intellectual development? And I think that we need to equate the two. We don't go into the jungles of Papua New Guinea and expect to find NASA rocket scientists or engineers that build 747s. So technological development comes in conjunction to sociological development and education and awareness and thinking, and we shouldn't sell that division short.
And well, I'm not suggesting that they would, you know, be monsters just wanting to kill us. I'm just suggesting they might be so far advanced that we would be inconsequential to them, totally inconsequential, as an anthill might be to your boot, you know, if you step in the wrong place.
Well, if we look at the records so far, and based upon the Air Force's records alone, there were a period of time when there were as many as 700 sightings in the United States alone. This doesn't encompass the rest of the world in cyclic periods of time. And if they wanted to squash us, they certainly could have done it over the thousands of years while we were running around with swords and spears and arrows and everything else.
That's a very good point.
Right? And so when you look at the amount of sightings and interactions and films and really tangible evidence, if we were going to be squashed, it would have been simple to do it at any time, and is still simple to do it at any time. So perhaps we ourselves need to step and take a step further than that and see, well, if that's not the case, what is happening? And perhaps there's more to it than just that.
Well, that's a good answer, Glenn. I've got to agree. We have all of this evidence that's piled up. I mean, obviously, something, in fact, is going on. Back to the moon for a second. Richard C. Hoagland made some remarkable claims about glass structures on the moon, crystalline glass structures. I've heard that from any number of guests. Gigantic things, just monstrous things, actually going very high above the surface of the moon. Do you give credence to that?
There have been reports, and it has been done by astronomers and both amateur and professional ones with different types of equipment in different locations so that you get a varying angle so that you start to eliminate haze factors and triangulation and things like that. And there is an area that has been reported. I myself have not seen that. A large Van de Graaff type structure that stands, and based upon the measurements of its shadow, they're talking about it perhaps 5,000 feet high.
Yes.
I know I discussed this with John Lear, and I consider John a friend. Even though we agree on some things, we disagree on others, but we share the same desire for the truth. And and we served together flying airplanes, so we have talked about this subject.
No kidding. You served with John, huh?
Yes, we have.
John, as you know, is quite a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have the opportunity, just offhand remark here, to hear the program I did with John in which he did what I called the Lear test?
No.
Oh, too bad.
No, but I've talked to him recently, and we're planning to get together in his neck of the woods, so I'm...
Well, when you see him, be sure you take the Lear test.
All right.
I did, and it's worth doing, Glenn. Believe me, it's worth doing. He's quite a guy, and I know that he has a lot of beliefs about the moon.
Yes.
Some of which even extend, Glenn, into its being a relay station. Brace yourself for souls.
Well, there can be all kinds of speculation. I, at this stage of the game, have dealt with the NASA photographs that my father collected due to his association when he went to lecture before 22 scientists at Goddard Space Flight Center at 67. Actually, it was an invitation along with the Pentagon as well thereafter. And I've seen the microfiche and the volumes of photographs where you go through and then you order the photographs and they come in 8x10s or 20x15s, and then you go through them, high-quality pictures, and then you can start to pick out things like clouds and formations and areas that appear to be under construction. And so there's a great deal of information, and I don't believe the government hides that from us. It just requires... a curiosity factor and a diligence on our part to go and look for it.
All right. Now, listen to me, folks. We've put some photographs. Glenn has put some photographs up on the coasttocoastam.com website. Now, Glenn, what I want you to do is knock my socks off. And I want to invite the audience to go up and take a look at these photographs as well. And if I can see anything like you have described that people have seen, or even anything that I can truly regard as artificial, then I'm going to be with you, Glenn. Let's go through them and see what we've got, okay?
All right, very good. Now, I've been reminding that these are just some of them that we had available on the computer. There are literally hundreds of more that are, I would say, higher quality. But let's take a look at what we've got here.
These look pretty good, especially this first one. It looks like, to me, a really barren moonscape. So tell me what I'm looking at.
Are you looking at the one here, the Apollo 12 from the dark side of the moon?
Let's see.
You see a large luminescent
Apollo
object?
12, dark side of the moon, large luminescent object lighting huge area of lunar surface. Yeah. Now, that appears to be, well, okay, I see it. Something very, very bright is reflecting from the moon's surface. There's no question about it. But now, this is photography, right?
That's correct.
So what do you maintain this is we're seeing?
Well, this is the question, and this is the reason the book exists, and this is to create an open dialogue about what we have theorized about and what we have perpetuated over decades and what tends to exist or question those things.
So what do you think it is?
This here on the dark side of the moon, on this particular orbit, it was during the time when the sun's in the opposite direction. So you see down here on the surface, normally if this photograph would be taken on the dark side with nothing luminescent on the surface, then of course you'd have a black photo.
Right.
And barely be able to see any of the topography or geology involved.
Looks like they dropped a flare.
Yeah, well, a flare that would illuminate, well, shall we say conservatively, perhaps 25 square miles would be quite a flare. So we're looking at a shot that's taken. This is a Hasselblad picture, so it's a high-quality, high-definition picture.
It is, indeed.
Of a large, illuminated area on the dark side of the moon. And that, of course, brings into question, is it on the surface? Is there something down there that is creating it? Is it between that's flying over the surface?
Okay, what does NASA say it is?
Well, I haven't asked them. I doubt seriously that they would give you a definitive answer.
Well, I sure as hell would expect one. I mean, it looks like the sun from the moon. It looks like a portion of the moon is so bright that the sun, and in fact, But it's could it be the sun?
Well, how could it be the sun if you're looking at only the bottom corner of this section of the photo? If you would have sun luminescence, it would include a terminator in which you would have light and dark, and it would be greater than in just one square corner of the picture.
Okay, I agree. It's very weird. What are the best people outside of NASA who have been willing to comment on this photograph think that it might be?
But I would say that my father got a great deal of support and a great deal of verification on the pictures that he put together in here, and there's a number of them that I believe show that there are UFO activity.
All right, we'll get to that. I'm just right now with this incredible brightness.
Mm-hmm.
What do people say it could be?
Well, they don't give you any reasons for that. So, and that, I think, is definitive of this entire subject. If you ask people if somebody takes a picture of a UFO or has a sighting or whatever, you get often for many years swamp gas, temperature inversion, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So you get the runaround. And at this particular stage of the game, nobody bothers to even address the situation.
So you've got a high-quality, high-definition picture of the moon showing what appears to be something as bright as a sun emanating from it or reflecting from something, and NASA won't say, well, yeah, this is interesting. I mean, they won't even comment that far?
Well, I believe that, they are strapped for cash. They're not getting a whole lot of public support. Every time you look at their budget, it continues to be dwindled down, and their technical people and scientists and educators are thrown on the streets. And so they're literally, when you look at these catalogs, tens of, not hundreds of thousands of pictures, this is sitting away in warehouses, and you don't find people going through that because they are too busy trying to maintain their jobs to work current projects. We kind of... We don't give them the support they need, we don't give them the finance they need, and we certainly don't promote NASA as a space program, and it would help, of course, if it was inclusive.
Now, you certify to me that this photograph is an unaltered NASA photograph, right?
Absolutely. Every photo in that book is included with the NASA serial numbers on there for the general public to order for themselves,
just as
we did.
All right. Well, you got me there. It's a pretty good anomaly, all right. And I'm just sorry you can't come up with any guesses about what it might be.
Well, my guess is exactly that. I consider that to be either a surface illumination or above the surface, but either way, it's not a natural phenomena. So that if it's not ours, then it has to be somebody else's.
Second photograph.
I'm looking at a photograph here.
Materials being moved from small crater and pouring into larger crater below?
That's correct. There are actually two shots of this. The one in the book is actually a much closer up. But if you look in this central crater here, the larger one that's at about 12 o'clock and halfway up the photo.
Got it.
And just above it is a little tiny one, and you see this material that is coming over the rim of the crater and bellowing into the bottom of it. Now, when you take that and look at the enlargement of the photo, it's much more concise.
I see it.
And
I'll be damned, I do see it, actually.
And there are areas on the moon where you can see terracing, very much that you see over the southwestern United States when you fly over and we're looking at our strip minings. They're terraced down. You see areas where material is moved, where rims...
You can actually see something pouring out and collecting, in fact.
Correct.
Inside that crater.
Well, it tells you two things.
It's the damnedest thing.
First of all, something's conducting that activity. And secondly, in a vacuum, materials don't move concisely from one area to the next. So you have to have some type of atmospheric pressure to be the vehicle or the medium to hold the dust particles to carry them from one place to the next.
There is no atmosphere on the moon, right?
Well, that's not what they said.
Well, that's not what who said.
Well, that's not what's said at all. In fact, when you see some of the NASA photographs, you see a very thin layer, a very hazy layer in some areas of the moon, depending on what's susceptible to the Earth's gravitational pull and what's not at a particular time.
Is that debris just being held by the moon's gravity?
It can be held by the moon's gravity, but once you have lunar gravity and then you have reports of water geysers, and you have reports of clouds, then you start to put together the...
Clouds? Now, wait. What reports of clouds?
Well, here, when we looked at this chronology of listings here, we're talking about mist moving over the floor of Crater Chicard, obscuration of the floor of Crater Plateau, and so on and so forth. So they're talking about atmospheric disturbance, of course, a greatly reduced from what we're accustomed to here, but some atmospheric disturbance on the moon. On this particular article, they're talking about that Dr. John Freeman, in 1971, said that instruments left on the moon detected moon geysers lasting for 14 hours.
Moon geysers, water.
Water clouds erupted through cracks on the lunar surface, and the clouds spread to cover an area of more than 10 square miles. Well, a cloud has to be supported by a medium. It cannot spread in a vacuum. So one step leads to the next.
Well, that's amazing. Are there photographs of these geysers?
That I don't know. There's a photograph in the book of a very large crater. I can't recall it off the top of my mind, but there are two orbits on this crater. On one orbit, the crater is approximately 50 miles in diameter, and you see that the northern edge is completely obscured, the rim, the floor, everything. On the next orbit, that entire area of mist and clouds has moved north of the crater, and now the entire crater that was originally obscured is completely free, and you can see the rim and the floor and everything.
God, I just wonder if I can see this because you have suggested it to me, and it is an odd formation of nature. But, I mean, it really does look like something's pouring into that crater, and I would challenge a lot of the audience to go up there and take a look themselves. It really, really, really looks that way. So you take a look yourself. Certainly, what we're seeing here would not be consistent with anything that anybody figures ought to be going on the moon. The moon should be dead as a doornail. At least that's the conventional wisdom, is it not?
But it's not any longer. We're talking about lunar earthquakes, volcanoes, water geysers.